Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Steve Rivera here on Eye on the Ball, my new show. I guess it's maybe day 8 of the Steve Rivera hostage situation, sports-wise, here on KVOI 1030 AM. You can call us in at 790-2040. And today I have a special guest, a longtime U of A administrator, Rocky LaRose. Glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
And in person, I know you're retired. I hate you. You have a great life. You know that.
I know it.
I see it on Facebook all the time. Fantastic trips all over the country and world. And then you have photos to shoot it. When did you become a great photographer?
You know, it actually started in the athletic department back in the 80s when we couldn't afford a photographer.
Uh-huh.
And I was traveling with the teams, and some of the student athletes would say, hey, can you take my picture? And I just fell in love with it.
Wow. And now, is it a business or just a hobby?
Oh, no, just a hobby. Yeah.
Well, you have some great shots because you put them on Facebook and Twitter and all that. It's a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Yeah, I said, when did she know how to do this? You're too busy being an administrator. Because you were there for 34 years?
35.
35 years. As a little kid, and then you came up the ranks.
I did.
Yeah. What a great time. As many of people know and who have listened to the show already in the week, I kind of like to reminisce and go back to the good old days, what I like to call the good old days. And in my days, there were the late 80s, 90s, 2000s. And Rocky was one of the good guys, good women, good people for me because I was just kind of starting up. And she was very fair to me. I hope I was fair to her, you and the U of A.
You were.
It was just what we have to do as a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
At least we try our very best to do that. So 35 years, you started when you were 10. and I understand you were one of the first, if not the first, woman, female athletes to get a full scholarship. Softball.
Yeah, I thought I hit the lottery.
Yeah.
I mean, because growing up, there wasn't that opportunity. And then somehow in the mid-70s, with Title IX coming around, universities started offering scholarships. And when they handed that to me, honestly, I thought I had hit the lottery. It was one of the more joyous days of my life.
Can you say or can you remember how much it cost back then?
Well, I got $191 a month. I remember that. And that was to include housing and food.
Right. Well, that's the good old days, really.
Yeah.
Do you get a great sense of feeling when you see those videos of kids getting scholarships, the walk-ons getting scholarships now?
Oh, I feel
it.
It
means a ton, doesn't it?
I feel it. Yeah, and it's so joyous to know that they still have that sense of reward and accomplishment.
Right. It's a big deal.
It is.
I mean, you're
deal.
Talking thousands now.
Exactly.
What does it cost to attend U of A now?
Yeah. Having been gone 4 years, I can't say, but it's a lot of money.
Cost rises
a lot of
real
money.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Do you miss it already? I know you're still part of it, but.
Of course I do. I am so grateful for the 35 years I had there, plus the years as an athlete, and wonderful friendships and memories and people, and just sometimes literally my stomach will fall thinking I might have made some other decision and not have been there for 35 years, you know.
Right.
And it's such a big part of my life that I miss it.
It's funny because you're a kind of a local girl. You grew up in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Or you were in Phoenix. To hear what brought you to Arizona, what was the appeal?
It was the University of Arizona. Interestingly enough, I won the state badminton championship my senior year of high school. Back in those days, as Title IX was just blooming, so to speak, when I was in high school, they didn't have softball, which was my sport. They had badminton or archery, and I picked badminton. And I know in the States we make a lot of fun of badminton, but it is a hard sport to play.
Quick sport.
And I actually got a scholarship offer to ASU. But I had been playing softball most of my life. So I went over and visited ASU, and back in the day, we didn't have the knowledge of working out and fitness.
Mm-hmm.
But in badminton, it's such an endurance sport. And I went over there, and they were working out so hard.
And no one would ever know that.
No, and it scared me. I thought, you know what? I'm going to go back and play softball with my friends. And long story short, I played for 2 years at Glendale Community College. Joking aside, I don't tell too many people that because those in athletics think, oh, you were a Prop 48 student. But I ended up then transferring to the University of Arizona with an academic scholarship and having an incredible softball career.
You did. No, you did. I think you were part of the team that won the first conference title.
First conference title ever in 1979. We beat ASU. I remember it as if it happened yesterday. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to hit a triple and knock in the winning run. And
that was like
a pretty
yesterday.
Exciting time.
Right,
yeah.
Right. You never forget those moments.
No, you don't.
The errors, yes. The hits, no.
Right.
The hits, no.
Right.
So that was a great time. And can you talk real quick about the transition from from the WAC at the time, that's what it was, right? To the Pac-10, it turned into the Pac-10 eventually.
Yeah, you mean for the women?
For the women, or just the men?
Yeah, because it was obviously we were in our infancy back then, mm-hmm. women's athletics in particular, but in a lot of ways, men's athletics also. And so it was an endearing time, I know, for the women. You know, we were the first generation of American women to play collegiately. Mm-hmm. And I can't understate this. We were having the time of our lives. I mean, we just couldn't believe we were stepping on that field and representing our university. So, you know, a lot of times people think back and they go, oh, you were out there, you know, challenging and parading. But no, we weren't. We were just having fun.
Right, right,
and,
right.
And, yeah.
You've seen kids, and you know how kids are, athlete kids. They have a swagger about them. You know who they are on campus. They kind of have that swagger. How was it back then, too, if you were that early with being an athlete? How was it in 79, 80?
Well, I'll sum it up for you. Somehow, and honestly, I don't know how this happened, but Rocky LaRose was the homecoming queen in 1978. And, how that happened, I don't know. I think I have the athletes to thank for that. But anyway, the reporter walked up to me, speaking of a reporter, walked up to me and said, how can an athlete be homecoming queen? So it was...
That's bizarre. That's a bizarre... Well, I guess now...
But that was back in the 70s, we had just started women's athletics, and there was, you know, the jokes that you were jockettes and, you know, these kind of things. And so, I don't even know how I answered that. But, yeah, it's different now, because mm-hmm. I think... That movement of women going into athletics and then the Olympics, think of the 84 Olympics with Mary Lou Retton, and then you even forward up to Jenny Finch being the star in the Olympics. And now women are put on a pedestal, women athletes, because of their talent and their, you know.
What a great time it is to be a woman, look at politically.
Right.
And all these platforms that they have. So how was the transition? You went from a smaller conference not that you knew about the smaller conference, but you were part of it, to the bigger conference. And it must have been a crazy, crazy anticipatory time where, wow.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Well, it was. And, you know, the women's first conference was the Intermountain Conference. The men were in the WAC. And then in 1978, 79, we moved into the PAC. 10, the men did. The women phased in. We eventually went to what was called the WCAA, and then we went into the PAC West, which was a precursor to the PAC 10. The women entered the PAC 10 conference in 1986. And, you know, it's when we merged programs in 83 under the direction of Cedric Dempsey, the women's department had a whole new face to it. It just completely changed everything. We went from the Ina Gettings PE building over mm-hmm. into McHale Center, and all of a sudden had a bunch of resources available to us that we had not had before. And it was a magical time. It truly was.
How was, two things, how was it working for one of the pioneers, Mary Robey, mm-hmm. and then working for one of the great guys, ADs, Cedric Dempsey?
It was, you know, looking back now, of course, I can't believe how blessed I was. Mary Robey was one of the leaders in women's athletics when we were in the AIAW, and Ced Dempsey was one of the most progressive, proactive leaders that we had in athletics. And just to give you an example, and these all didn't fall under his leadership, you know, Willie Williams was hired. He was, I think this is what I'm really so proud of the University of Arizona, and a lot of people don't know, is how progressive we were. Willie Williams was the first African-American Division I coach in the nation. Then Freddie Snowden was hired as, you know, if not the first, right close to the first Division I African-American basketball coach. When Ced was there, we hired Sue Hillman, who mm-hmm. was the first woman ever to be a head trainer over a Division I football program. And then we hired Meg Ritchie, who was the first woman strength coach, which is just amazing, mm-hmm. For a Division I football program. And then Ced elevated me to oversee day-to-day operations for football and basketball, the first woman in the country in my capacity. So, to have been blessed to have worked with both of them, and Mary, who hired some terrific coaches that stayed with us for many decades.
What I know we're going to have to go to break here pretty soon, but what was the biggest getaway you got from Cedric? The biggest...
was to take risks, because I'm not a big risk taker.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. But he was willing to do that, and, you know, in all aspects of it. And also his just vast knowledge of the depths of the NC2A mm-hmm. and how those policies can change the future and the direction of intercollegiate athletics.
Right, right. Bob, are we ready to go to a break here? Okay, we're going to take our first break. It goes by real quickly, doesn't it, these segments?
It does.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Thanks a bunch.
offense comes to the line. The ball is snapped. Sweep toss to the halfback. Trick play. He's going to throw it. Taking a shot deep. It's tipped and intercepted by Crest Insurance.
Wow, what a play by Crest Insurance. Nobody saw that coming, but Crest had the coverage in place that avoided a disaster. That's the benefit of an experienced team. Great coverage when it matters most.
Whether it's home, auto, or your business, the team at Crest Insurance makes all the difference. For outstanding coverage when you need it most, go with Crest Insurance.
Are you looking for something special? Stop by locally owned Cape Bonita. Since 1982, owner Carmen Petiti has been bringing amazing handcrafted furniture, glassware, pottery, clothing, jewelry, and art to Tucson. Carmen handpicks items direct from the artisans, so you get the best selection at the best prices. No need to travel abroad to find beautiful, one-of-a-kind items. Just stop by Cape Bonita at 6934 East Tanque Verde to see our Southwestern and Mexican treasures. Call 721-1998.
What does it mean to own a Lexus? It means you'll never be without one. If yours is in for service, we give you a complimentary loaner Lexus. Not a ride in a shuttle van or a seat on the couch. Another Lexus, till yours is ready. It means the highest level of luxury, technology, performance, and dependability. But don't take our word for it. Ask a Lexus owner. You know, the one with the perpetual smile on their face. Lexus of Tucson. At Speedway in Columbus, in the Auto Mall, or LexusofTucson.com.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
The man and the legend, John C. Scott on politics, from 3 to 5 p.m. on KVOI, AM 1030, trusted local news and talk. Reliable and timely financial information from Bloomberg Radio Network, 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. on KVOI, AM 1030, trusted local news and talk.
Trusted local news and talk. AM 1030, KVOI. We have our eye on entertainment.
Welcome back. This is Steve Rivera. I'm here with Rocky LaRose, former UA athletic administrator. We're going to bounce around here because there's a lot to talk to, lot to talk about. We were talking about Cedric. One of the big things that you had to do in your time was kind of fill in and be a interim AD every now and again. How was the time when you had to fill in for Jim Livengood when he left, and then there was that little maybe a year or so window where you had to kind of fill in?
Well, for me personally, it was a career highlight, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're a student athlete at the University of Arizona, you never dream that you're going to grow up and actually lead the department, especially
right,
when
right.
we were separate departments when I started out. So I had to pinch myself every day when that happened. I was obviously very grateful. I love the University of Arizona. I felt, you know, one of my greatest strengths was knowing the U of A, knowing the U of A administrators, making sure that the athletic department was truly integrated within the university. And so to be able to have that role and to work closely with the president, with Robert Shelton and the Board of Regents, and, you know, take that little bit of the reins was really a remarkable thing for me personally. And hopefully good for the department.
In that time, it's kind of like being, maybe tell me I'm wrong, please, that you kind of just kind of hold the ship until the next person comes in if they were not going to hire you? Or do you actually have to make some big-time decisions in terms of decisions?
Oh, absolutely. You can't hold the ship. I mean, not at that level, not at the level that we're at, the elite Division I, you know, FBS level. There are many decisions to be made. You got to keep moving. We had to keep fundraising. It was a big priority during that period of time. You know, we had some always, unfortunately, had some NCAA mm-hmm. issues we had to deal with. So, no, you got to keep moving.
Right, right. How was that for you? And I say that because there has to be a lot of pressure involved.
There is, but also knowing that you're not in for the long haul.
Maybe that's what I meant for my first question. Right, right.
It actually makes the decision-making a lot easier. And the fact that I knew the coaches so well, mm-hmm. I'd already worked with them for so long, mm-hmm. Was intimately involved in all those issues prior to becoming named director of athletics. It was just a continuation, quite frankly.
How does this woman who got a PE degree at U of A, and I'm sure you pinched yourself a lot then too, become this person? Did you even kind of say, wow, here I am?
No, that's why I always tell young people, don't let your dreams limit you, because I was sure I was going to be a PE teacher for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. And I loved physical activity, and I loved teaching. And next thing you know, I'm the head softball coach at the University of Arizona.
Was that the biggest, was that the first big break?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I graduated literally in May, mm-hmm. and became the head coach in July. That I don't think will ever happen again. I was 21 years old. Again, remember, women's athletics was in its infancy in the 70s. So the fact that that happened was, that was tremendous. And, I think Mary Roby thought, because I was a fairly talented player, that I could coach. And it was on an interim basis. We knew that I was only going to do it for a year while she did a national search. And so I'm forever grateful to her. But I quickly realized that coaching wasn't for me and was very grateful after that year that she had funding provided to her to allow her to hire an assistant AD. And that's how my administrative career got started.
Wow. So how did you find out you were not ready to be a coach? Let me tell you something. That's a tough gig.
It's a tough gig.
You know, what you did administratively is a tough gig, but coaching is a tough gig for a lot of different reasons.
Yeah, and things were changing so fast back then for mm-hmm. coaches, particularly women coaches. You know, we started out in the AIIW where you didn't have national recruiting, you didn't fly everywhere, athletes were allowed to try out on your campus. So it was, a lot of different rules, but we could see the direction it was moving in. And of course, I, had worked very closely with coaches on the men's side too, and sought their advice and knew the kind of pressures they were under. Also, I went from being a player literally 2 months earlier to being the head coach and having to put that hat on, and mm-hmm. I had some of my dearest friends on the team. So, but it was an incredible learning experience. It helped me throughout my entire career understanding the pressures that coaches are under and just the fact that they're a franchise owner and how to deal with it and how administratively I was dealt with, I think really helped me greatly in how I dealt with coaches throughout my career.
Right. Well, you picked you took the fork in the road and it took a left, and it turned out to be very good.
It did.
Very good decision.
Yeah. Who could have foreseen that our women's department would merge with the men 3 years later and that then I would have the opportunities that I had.
Well, soon after, Kendria came on board.
1986, we brought Kendria on board.
It had to be about 3-4 years after that, after you were there
uh-huh.
as a coach. Because he wasn't hired initially to replace you. Somebody else
right.
was.
Right. I coached in 79-80, mm-hmm. and then there was Paula Noel was a coach in between, and then we hired Coach Kendria.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you have loved to have played for him?
Oh, that is such an understatement. Yeah. But I've got to watch his whole career develop. And
yeah.
And so that's been a,
Yeah, one of the great guys that I've ever met was with him in Australia when he won the title, won the gold medal, and then again in Greece when unfortunately they didn't. But what a gracious winner and a gracious loser. I've always said, and you know this, if you know how to lose graciously, you know how to win graciously.
Yeah, he is a great human being. And Coach Kendria, Coach Bush,
oh, you have
Coach
a punch
LaRose.
Of
I mean, all of the
oh, you have a bunch of
Lute Olson. I mean, when you think of that, it's the consistency that brought us the great successes mm-hmm. that we had in the 90s and the 2000s. Mm-hmm. They came, they stayed, they conquered.
Right, and did it a lot.
Right.
No, and those, we talk about that 97, 98, and that era, mid-90s, a great time to be a Wildcat because there was a lot of winning going on.
A lot of national championships.
Right. Did you figure back in the day, too, that women's softball would take off like it has, and it's unbelievably huge?
I did foresee it because it's such a great game, and it's quick and it's fast, mm-hmm. and the women can really show their talents in this sport. Of course, I'm biased because it was my sport. But we knew Coach Kendria was special. you know, when Mary Robey and Sid Dempsey and I, you know, and we brought Coach Kendry on board, we knew he was a special one. You know, it's hard for us to it's hard for me to articulate what do you see in a coach when you're recruiting them. And we recruit them. I mean, this is, you know, it's a mutual recruitment going on. But he had done such a tremendous job at, in Casa Grande, and his, you know, everyone just loved him. It was a no-brainer, as they say.
And his personality is one that
personality.
He listens. He listens, and then he knows how to apply it to people.
And great respect from his players.
Right, right, right. Well, how was that, you know, in 87 when I showed up in a pretty good program, you can kind of see it on the rise, and then 1990 comes, and he does what many people thought not possible. He knocked off the Giant and won the title. How was that as a former player, now administrator?
Well, it's one of those memorable moments you'll just never forget. You know, it's literally, you know where you were sitting.
I remember where I was sitting. I was in the press box.
Yeah. And you see it happening. And, you know, you're so happy for the players and you know how hard they've worked. And, it was just a thrilling time. I remember, you know, getting the ball and making sure everybody signed it. So we had that historic moment documented.
Right.
And, right. Yeah.
And to beat UCLA to get there,
right.
You know, the number of championships they had won.
Right.
And not with, now that you look back, right, I have, it wasn't with a lot of those great star softball players. You had very good players, but it wasn't your, like you talk about basketball, five-star people.
Right.
Now the people he has to recruit, but back then it was this younger women who could play the game.
Yeah, but that's what Kendry is good at is assessing talent, bringing them together, and there wasn't an expectation back then either.
Right.
So I think that's what made it so thrilling.
Right. No. And it was Oklahoma City. It was a crazy time.
He made it look easy. You know, you win eight, and now you know.
Right.
To win the ninth one, it just shows how it's not that easy.
Right. Undeniable. Because now it's a hard time to get back. And,
right. And there's parity, and you know.
Well, he created the monster.
He did.
Now he has to feed his own monster because he's the one that created this mess.
Exactly.
He can only blame himself.
That's right.
And we talk about this with him a lot. Where the dynamics of his coaching style, I don't know if it's changed, but that dynamic has changed too. His back in the day coaching, now he has to deal with a different type of athlete.
Yeah, well, we all do. Administratively, I would say that too. I mean, the student athletes, the parents, it was all different in my early career as it was compared to when I left.
We have about a minute and a half. Do tell, because it is tough with today's internet and parents wanting to be involved and overbearing parents who want to be involved. I've seen them all the time.
Yeah. Well, I love parents. Let me say that right off the top. But yes, it became nearly a full-time job towards the end, talking to parents.
Right. I've often said, and I had two kids who played, and I try to stay as far as away as I could, but all the while clapping, that the worst thing to have in the kids were parents.
Well, and the biggest laugh I'd always get is when they would tell me that the coach is not playing their child when he's the best player on the team. And I always want to say, if he's the best player on the team, that coach is going to be playing him.
No. Right, because the coach wants to win just as much
as
everybody
else. There's too many pressures in Division I to not play your best athletes.
And their job is on the line, too, because, you know, at the end of the day, they have to win.
That's right.
Are we ready to go to break, Bob? I think we are. Cool. Well, we're going to go to break for the second time, and we'll come back after after this ends on the other side.
If you've been thinking about buying a home or refinancing, now is a great time. Rates are still historically low. At Sun Street, we offer a wide variety of loans, from first-time homebuyer programs to construction loans. It's always a good idea to get started early to see how much you can afford. The process is easy. Call us today at Sun Street Mortgage and speak to one of our experts at 547-2400. Take the street that leads you home. Sun Street Mortgage.
AZBK number 0907366, NMLS number 145171. Sun Street Mortgage LLC is an equal housing lender.
Sound familiar?
Well, we did the oil change, but we found your blinker fluid was low, your fan belt needed lube, and the air in your tires needed to be rotated. Your total is $650.
Take a deep breath and breathe easy at Breathe Easy Automotive. We explain every service before we work on your car. Our mechanics are on salary, not commission. Check out our website at breatheeasyautomotive.com for more information and specials.
Hi, folks. This is Mario, Dr. Bedoya's son of Dedicated Dental. Quick question for you. At what age should a person stop caring for their teeth? Let me tell you about a gentleman that came in to see Dr. Bedoya. He was interested in implants at the age of 98. That's right. He wanted implants for his 99th birthday as a gift to himself. Dr. Bedoya was intrigued by this man's wish to have implants at nearly 100 years old and asked why he wanted to do this at this point in his life. The man said, Doc, I don't know how much time I have left, but however much or little it is, I want to enjoy the rest of my life and eat whatever I want to eat. What a great answer, and what a way to live. Dr. Bedoya and his staff at Dedicated Dental came through for him, and the man had his implants for his 99th birthday. We should all learn from this man's outlook on life and seek to live a happy and enjoyable life. At Dedicated Dental, it's not just about teeth. We are here to help you live better. Call today for your free consultation, 573-1900. That's 573-1900. Smile.
No more knowledgeable woman than Dawn English and her irresistible Tucson, food and culture in the Old Pueblo. From 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on KVOI AM 1030, trusted local news and talk. Reliable and timely financial information from Bloomberg Radio Network. 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. on KVOI AM 1030, trusted local news and talk.
Trusted local news and talk, AM 1030 KVOI. We have our eye on news.
We're back. I'm here with Rocky LaRose, a former University of Arizona administrator. I'm Steve Rivera here on KVOI, Eye on the Ball. You can call us if you like, 790-2040. We're talking on various subjects. I was wondering, in the administrator role that you had, the many hats that you had, what was the percentage of things that you had to do, like priorities, 20%, coaches, athletes? What were the biggest breakdowns?
Well, that's what I loved about my job, was I never knew what was going to happen day to day, and it was always different and new challenges. A lot of it was putting fires out, quite frankly. I had all the coaches reporting to me directly for day-to-day operations, but also all the support services. So it made for one-stop shopping for the coaches, which was convenient. Mm-hmm. Everything that a student athlete or a coach touched during the day came through my office, whether it was the medical staff or academics or sports information in time, strength and conditioning and life skills. So, typically coaches, the sort of administrative philosophy we had and I had in particular was they're in charge of their own franchise. I am not I'm not going to micromanage the coaches. It's their job. If I stepped in and changed something that was on the field, for instance, right, then I become the coach, and then they have an excuse to say that. So most of my job was spent dealing with student-athlete issues or with issues between the staffs, and making sure that teams were treated equally and fairly and that we were moving forward and staying within the budget.
Well, you've been a mentor to some of the ones that have come through the program, and now they are administrators as well. There's probably a handful, probably, yes?
Oh, yeah.
At U of A,
yeah.
Very strong ones, local, in-house, and then somewhere else.
Yeah, well, I think that's what the University of Arizona and the athletic department that we've done a good job of is growing our own talent, so to speak. And we have so many of them that are administrators today that were even – James Francis was an athlete of ours. Susie Mason came. She was an intern for us. Yeah, she played basketball back on the East Coast. Of course, Erica Hanson Barnes. She's played softball for us.
Steptoe, is he still?
He is now with the Alumni Association.
Okay.
But yes,
still
he was an athlete in our department for a significant amount of time. Becky Bell, who was one of our coaches, who's now life skill. Again, I can't overstate that. I think that was how Arizona became so successful, is having that continuity and having people that love and believe in the university.
And who have been there and done
and
that.
And have been there.
Yeah,
yes.
Been there, done that as athletes. You started, I think you started CATS, didn't you, the CATS program?
I did, yeah, way
you
back in the early 90s. I am. That's that became a national model for the NCAA and required all Division I programs to have that type of a program. So
explain it real quick for the people who
Yeah, it's... it's a life skills program. It's which can cover, you know, anything on the continuum from learning how to take care of your finances to learning about leadership, to making the right decisions, to, you know, bystander intervention, to, you know, substance abuse. And it's an educational program within an educational program, teaching athletes that there is life outside and how to live your life.
That's, it's funny because I talk about stuff like that a lot with athletes. After, once they leave, a lot of them aren't used to the applause stopping. You know, once the applause ends, what do you do?
Right.
And how do you handle it?
Right.
And you've seen today a lot of athletes don't know how to handle it.
Right.
Either with money or whatever, or with their life. It's a tough situation.
It is. And, you know, so many of our revenue athletes, but
right.
not necessarily revenue. It
right.
happens in golf. It happens in baseball. The athletes come here and they see their dream of playing professionally, and then it doesn't play out. And we want to make sure they have that foundation, that if it doesn't work out, they at least have a foundation to build on, or they always have a home to come back to, whether it's to finish their degree
it a requirement that they participate, or is it a buy-in? Where
it depends. I mean, some programs are voluntary and others are mandatory. You know, when we bring in national speakers, it's mandatory, you know, depending on the subject. And subject can range from everything from substance abuse to sexual harassment to, you know, eating disorders, you know, so it depends.
And a lot of that is today's issues.
Correct.
All those
yeah,
issues. How have, and maybe we go back there in a little bit, but how have athletes changed from back in the day to now?
Well, a lot of it has to do with social media, quite frankly. You know, we didn't have that back in the day. And so there's a lot, I'll be honest, you could contain situations and you can, you know, or you would learn about situations in a different manner than you do now, where you're sometimes surprised on something that might pop up somewhere. But it's just a whole different mindset with social media.
Right. And it's maybe within the last 10 years, you were still an administrator at the time. So it was right near your.
Yeah. In fact, I was there when Facebook and Twitter
came about,
and we had to set some policies in place. You know, I think I actually was quoted in USA Today because I made a kind of a controversial statement that we were not going to contain our athletes on Twitter. We were not going to
babysit them.
Babysit them, correct, and that we would allow them to have Twitter accounts. And my,
this is how far back?
Sometimes in the mid-2000s somewhere. And you know, I said, but that's part of the education. That's why we're here, is to teach young people how to act. And if they make mistakes, they're going to learn from those.
That's funny because I mention that all the time. And I know that, let me say this, and you don't have to respond to this if you don't want, but I think U of A has kind of handcuffed the people that play for them in terms of publicity and things like that. And I'm in the media, so I'm kind of a little biased to that. We don't get access to them a lot. And that's fine. If that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do. But part of growing up is going to college and messing up or learning how to do your laundry, learning where to be at a certain time, know how to use the fork and the spoon. And you know what I'm saying? And all that is part of growing up.
Well, it is. And, you know, you have to remember these kids are coming here. It's the first time they've been free in their life. And they have all this opportunity in front of them and all these things to choose from. And, you know, I was the sort of the principal of the department, the disciplinarian, when it came to departmental policies, not necessarily team policies. But this was a coordinated effort between the coach and the dean of students and my office on as to what action sometimes we would take. And, you know, you have to look at that and remember that they are young people making choices in their lives. And, you know, and misdeeds, some of them are just little misdeeds. Some of them are very serious, and we took those very seriously over the time. But, I think one of my most memorable moments was one of our star football players, whose name shall remain anonymous, was dating one of our volleyball players, and his best friend, also on the football team, was dating a volleyball player. And this is one of those, you know, they always say that no call is good after midnight.
Right.
And I had a good relationship with the U of A Police Department, and I get a call that two football players and two volleyball players had somehow broken into Arizona Stadium and were sitting up at the top and had a six-pack of beer. And so I had to call them into my office the next day and had all four of them sitting there scared to death, you know. And I tell them to tell me what happened and what they did. And And then I said, and you didn't invite me because...
So that's how you broke the ice.
Yeah. You just have to realize they are young people. They're experimenting. That wasn't the end of the world.
Sure.
They didn't break anything.
Sure.
And you move on. And then there's the more serious, obviously.
Right, right. No, I think perspective has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. And you're right. What was it? Okay, big deal. Let's move on from this and you'll do what you do. But how was it being the bad guy?
I actually took it on as being sort of maternal.
Uh-huh.
You know, nothing like having a 300-pound lineman crying in your office.
Remorse or because?
Yeah, well, you want to get him to that point. Uh-huh. You know, I would turn into a Dr. Phil, to be honest with
right,
you.
Right.
I would be asking him, and how's that doing?
Sure, sure. I often ask coaches, did you have a psychologist in your family or are you one?
Yeah.
Because it takes one nowadays.
It does. It does. But sometimes you need to break that barrier with a young person to make them understand what they've done and how they can change that behavior. And I think if you take that educational approach, that's what's going to change them and what's going to make them look at a situation differently in the future rather than berating them or, you know, punishing them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. It's funny. I'm a parent, and you've been a parent to many kids that you've gone through, thousands. We've talked about this before. The kids know what they're doing right and know what they're doing
they
wrong.
Do. They do, but sometimes they don't consciously think through the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that I took that on as that was my role to kind of play that out for them long term.
Right. Not fun to do.
No.
But
rewarding in the sense, you know, I go back now to reunions and homecoming.
Well, yeah. Let's talk about it on the other side because we'll talk about that because that's the
Sounds
fun
great.
Part of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks so much. We'll go to break right now.
These days, most families are concerned with having the right insurance coverage. Protecting your family, home, auto, and other valuable possessions can be challenging and sometimes expensive. Crest Insurance gives you flexible options and solutions while saving you money. Insurance is not one size fits all, and at Crest, we find the coverage that's best for you and your family. Visit us online at www.crestins.com or call us toll free at 888-881-5765.
Hey, this is Ken Flower of Arizona Party Rental. It's that time. U of A tailgating. I gotta have one of those burgers and one of those dogs, and who's under this Arizona Party Rental tent? You look familiar.
That's right, I'm Sheriff Napier.
Gosh, it's great to see you.
Hey, you're Ken Flower. Aren't you wanted?
I'm speechless.
That's right, everybody wants Arizona Party Rental.
Hey, you can join the party too. Arizona Party Rental just west of Alvernon on Speedway or online at arizonapartyrental.net.
Where you bank really does matter. Hughes Federal Credit Union is proud to be recognized as the number one credit union across all of Arizona by Forbes. This national recognition highlights our commitment to high-quality products and services, our customer service, digital services, and financial advice. At Hughes Federal Credit Union, we offer higher savings rates, lower fees, and many free services. Make the switch. Join Hughes today. Visit hughesfcu.org/bestcreditunion. Certain restrictions apply. Insured by NCUA.
As a mother, you don't want to have to worry about this bill is coming, but then she needs this chemo. That's a decision you shouldn't have to make.
It's a huge burden lifted financially, and so it allows you to give singular focus to your child. I've never known a hospital that takes care of their patients so thoroughly.
That was the first thing I was like, how are we going to do this? When they told us that we didn't have to pay a single bill, I was like, wow. They pretty much have saved us.
It's like the world has been lifted off of your shoulders, and now your focus is supporting this child.
There is not another hospital like St. Jude. The patient care is unmatchable. It saved my life. It saved my daughter's life. It saved our family.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
Trusted local news and talk, AM 1030 KVOI. We have our eye on politics.
And welcome back. I'm Steve Rivera here on Eye on the Ball. I'm here with, I don't want to say Rusty, Rocky LaRose. We were talking about a story off the air that was pretty funny. Great conversations. Thank you very much for being here, Rocky. We were talking about you being the bad guy, but there's always the good side of being the bad guy.
There is.
And that's part of the rewarding part of the job in its entirety.
That's right. Sometimes it takes years to get to that point, but
right.
It happens.
Right.
I love going back to homecoming or team reunions, and I'll have one of our former athletes come up to me and go, thank you. Thank you for your words. Or do you remember this? And, I remember in your office. And, the good news is I always tell them, I don't remember specifically what you did, or, I'm just glad to see that you're where you're at right now. And,
right,
right.
I often talk to the coaches and say, because their concern is winning and still growing the kids and making them be who they want to become. But kids want to be coached, don't you
right.
think?
Absolutely.
Even if it's tough love or whatever, that at the end of the day, they want to be coached. Some don't. Some don't, and that's why they leave, because they're not used to being yelled at or whatever the word is. But you agree?
I agree. They want that leadership. They really, mm-hmm. truly do. And I think, I joked about the 300-pound lineman crying, but there's an awareness there that when you break through that, you can tell how vulnerable they truly are.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are many many stories like that, the 300-pound lineman, where they've come in and say, you were right, thank you for the advice. Mm-hmm. Even not later, but during their time there.
Oh, yeah. We've had, situations where we've sat student-athletes out, and then they've come back, and they've grown up. It's amazing how fast they can grow up in even just a short amount of time.
Right. It's funny. You've dealt with, 19 sports a year?
We had 20.
20 sports a year?
20,
What was the last one? Soccer, probably?
Oh, no, we added volleyball. Actually indoor volleyball at the very end.
That was the 20th.
Yeah. 21st.
And the most of the stories that we get to see, I'm talking the media, we get to see all of them, but we pay attention to are the football and the basketball, and they get the limelight. They get all the ink or whatever. But you have some fantastic stories in the minor sports that we probably don't get to for whatever reason. You were part of it. Are you kind of you wouldn't be biased, but you have a fascination for those smaller sports?
Yeah, because I've watched them grow and evolve and prosper since I became part of the department,
mm-hmm.
in 1979. And, I've watched, historically, I had a front row seat to this growth, and mm-hmm. there was a lot of emphasis, obviously, in the 70s, primarily on the revenue sports. Then as Title IX grew, we also took a particular spotlight on men's non-revenue teams. And so I watched their growth over the 90s and the 80s, and I saw athletic directors put more emphasis on broad-based programming, and therefore actually grew a lot of pressure on our non-revenue coaches. When I first started, it was the goal to be in the top 20. And then with our successes, it became a goal to be in the top 10.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, non-revenue coaches are not paid what revenue coaches are, but yet the pressure to win is still there. So
mm-hmm.
trying to find that balance for them was interesting. And I'll give you my perspective. I think it started back when, I don't know if you remember this, but the Knoxville, Tennessee paper started a ranking system where you got points for winning national championships in various sports,
mm-hmm.
and then they would add up the points at the end, and they made a big deal out of who was the highest point winner, and it was based on broad-based programming. Well, at first we all loved that because it did put such a focus on non-revenue sports that weren't getting attention. But what quickly happened was that then the pressure was put on athletic directors to make sure their non-revenue programs were as successful
Good.
As the revenue programs. And that's where I think, you have to have some compassion as a leader in the world of athletics, because that's a lot of pressure to put on someone who's not making anywhere near what a revenue coach is making.
So did that poll that they did in Tennessee, did that turn into the Sears?
Yes, the Sears Cup and then the Director's Cup.
Right, right. Well, now that you put it that way, there is a lot of pressure. And back in the day with you and Sed and Jim, mm-hmm. Live and Good, mm-hmm. it was a pretty good program.
Oh, man.
You want to compare things.
Honestly, we were the little engine that could.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you talk about David and Goliath. You know, we were the David, and we always were the underdogs. And our budget was nowhere near what even other schools were
sure.
in the university. But again, it goes back to that consistency of young coaches that we had that came in that were so enthusiastic and good and talented
right.
and they were able to recruit. But yeah, we were fourth in the Sears Cup. You
mm-hmm.
know, we were rolling.
And consistently
and
in the top 10.
Consistently in the top 10.
Right, right. Well, when Kendrea won the title in 90 and we were there writing it, and I know that there was some big media people there at the time. It's, you know, it's softball. But people, that was the first team title you had ever won at U of A.
Mm-hmm.
And people couldn't believe that. With all the success of basketball and some success with football and everything else, that was the first team title.
Oh, in softball?
In softball.
In softball, right. I mean, you knew we had won baseball titles before
mm-hmm.
in 76 and in 80.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, for women, that was our first team title. We had won an individual title. Diane Johnson had won an individual swimming title in the 70s. But yeah, that's why it was such a momentous, historic occasion.
Right, no, a lot of fun. And then you had guys like Bush, mm-hmm. and God, where else are you going to go with this?
LaRose and J.K. and
Rubio, who's done a fantastic volleyball.
And Joan Bombassini, who took our women's basketball program to
a lot
new
of
heights,
great names. And,
yeah.
A lot of success there.
Yeah, there's and now Laura, you know, Ionello.
A lot of fun. A lot of stories that we don't tell, and there's a lot of great stories, and you probably have a lot of them. You know, Abdi,
mm-hmm.
a great story of where he came from, and now he's this
right.
big-time runner.
Yeah.
So many stories.
Exactly. There are so many stories, and it's unfortunate that we don't get those stories out there, but that's our role. That's our job, is to build these young people, and I don't say that, you know, in any small way. I mean, that is our purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And to see them, you know, shine is really, really rewarding.
I think you're going to spend some time with me in the second hour, but do you remember some of the best athletes you saw? Athletes.
Yeah, I have to say, though, it's kind of like you don't pick out your favorite child.
I know the pressure of that.
That's what I always have a hard time with. Oh, let's have the all stars of the century, because there's so many that contribute to our victories.
There could be a long list, and we won't go from, you know, this is no particular order.
Yeah.
You know, that little asterisk.
Right. Right.
You've seen some fantastic people.
You know, I have been around the elite of the elite, whether
mm-hmm.
you look at swimming and, you know, some of the swimmers that have gone through our program.
Olympic
gold level medalist. Athletes.
Yes.
That is just, it's mind-boggling when you think of it, you know, the kind of talent that we've been around. It's just amazing.
You're
the pro athletes.
You're avoiding the question.
I am.
I want specifics.
I love them all.
come on, some guys football-wise have to stand out. Obviously, Kadeem Carey recently.
Oh, yeah.
Quarterback,
yeah.
You know.
The Gronk.
I mean, how could you not know the Gronk? You know, how do you stay?
But Teddy Bruschi. I mean,
and you know what? Those are, like, Teddy's a good guy.
Yeah.
And he's a good football player.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a great combination.
And I do want to say that some, when you're an administrator, there's some athletes that you go to that look you in the eye, that talk to you, that are not afraid to express themselves and be a part of. And it's those athletes that they do stand out. They do. There are athletes that stand out. And, you know, then there's the discipline matters. So you've got that continuum, but there's all those athletes in the middle that have gone on to become doctors and lawyers
sure.
and that have done wonderful things. So yeah, when you say, if you're just looking at pure talent, there's just too many to list.
There is a ton.
Yeah.
It's funny. I talk to junior high kids every now and again and talk about what I do and some of the books that I wrote. And there was this kid last year who said, to ask me a question, one of the final questions. He says, how do these athletes, what's the difference between these athletes and the good ones and the bad ones? And I'm talking the bad ones in terms of attitude. Mm-hmm. And you know those. You know, mm-hmm. I said, probably their parents. How they were raised to appreciate who they are and what they do, and their time here is fleeting in terms of being an athlete, because you have a shelf life, if you
right.
will. And if you don't know that beyond 30 or 40, whatever the sport is, that you have to have a life afterward.
Right.
And to being a good person, that doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be that person all the time.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's parents have a lot to do with that. You know,
yeah.
the individual does too, obviously, but how you raised has a lot to do with it.
I think That's true, but you have to remember some of our athletes just don't have the support system.
Oh, I understand that too.
Yeah.
And those are even special, more special, right. Because they've done it or they're self-made or self-taught.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm sure you've had a ton of those as well.
Yeah, I have an interesting story. I don't know if our
time we have here, but
there was a football player who had no family support and had a scholarship on the track team, but felt like his future was in football, so gave up his track scholarship and then blew out his knee. And the young man ended up with no scholarship, living in his car and, going down into our weight room to take extra packets of protein bars and stuff to live on. And we found out about this and, I started bringing him into the office and seeing what we could do to help. And just one of those sweet stories where, we brought on Coach Rich Rodriguez and, we're able to talk to him and we got the young man back on scholarship. And he has been the most gracious, grateful young man that I've ever come across in all my years. And he ended up inviting me to walk him out senior night of football. And, it's just those heartwarming stories, knowing that you were able to make a difference.
Right. And that's part why you do what you do.
That's right.
This PE teacher who became this administrator gets to do the stuff that I know most people don't get to do or you don't see behind the scenes.
Right.
Like Damon would talk about that. He does a lot of things, but he doesn't want anybody to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or all these people that you see would have money and they give or they don't, they give but they don't want to know or they want anybody to know because...
Right.
That's not what they're about.
Right. Well, and that was one of the aspects of my job. I mean, I was behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't the out front person. That was the director of athletics job. But that gave me a lot of freedom.
Right. Right. To be the good guy.
To do what I needed to do.
You're right.
And to be supportive of our coaches and at the same time, hopefully move them in the right direction.
How much fun did you have?
I had an absolute blast. I mean, when I think of how the program evolved and then what we got to do during those period of the 90s and the 2000s. Part of my role as day-to-day operations for football and men's basketball was dealing with the postseason. And a lot of stories with postseason. You went to four Final Fours. Just the logistics of putting a Final Four together when you've been on the road already for 4 weeks and moving great numbers of people and the fans and the donors and the constituency. And what a high that was. I'm so grateful to have been a part of that.
Right, right. And you had good days and you had bad days, obviously.
Yeah, we did. We had some very sad days. Obviously, we lost some student athletes. That's just heartbreaking to this day. I think of them often. I really do. And because you don't expect to lose a young person. And, they were very loved and part of our program. So those are heartbreaking moments.
Right, they're part of the family.
Right.
I know the coaches that have gone through that are obviously heartbroken, and it lasts, it's a lifetime.
It does last. And it's not just the coaches. It's the medical team. It's the, the other student-athletes.
Right.
It's the,
It's, and the other student-athletes are their best friends.
Right.
So how do you talk about losing a best friend and even maybe sometimes seeing it happen?
Right.
I've seen a few things, in the, remember Hank Gathers, a lot of things outside of U of A, and then you see it here. I remember, those stories are tough to deal with. Going into a losing locker room is never fun, never fun. But having lost a life while you're covering this game is
very devastating.
Yeah, and that's a great word for it. Okay, thank you very much. We're ending this hour. We'll be back on the other side. Thanks a bunch.